Fred and all of our practitioners are treasures, and we're so grateful. Thank you. Now, did you say that I made you come up here? I believe I asked. I didn't force you to come up here. Yeah, I made you do the 3 minutes. Yeah, that's right. That's me. Now, that I own, right? Okay, so I'm going to start by telling a story, and we'll see how it fits in or not later on. This is a story from the writings of Alan Cohen, and Alan Cohen tells a story about a gentleman who was working in a railroad yard. And in this railroad yard, they hauled a lot of products and stuff, so they had a refrigerator car for meat and for produce and that kind of thing. So this railroad man went in to do some repair inside the car. And while he was there, unfortunately, the door slammed shut behind him, and he couldn't get out. The next day, sadly, some people were looking for him. They went to find him. They went into the car, and there he was. He had passed away. And they said that by his lifeless body, he had scrawled into the floor with a penknife. He had written, "Getting cold, getting colder, frozen, freezing." What it turned out to be, though, is that the car was not even working. There was no refrigeration. It was the power of his mind that believed that he was locked in a refrigerator car that made the normal evening coolness believe that he was dying in that refrigerator car. And I believe that that is where the saying came from, "Many are cold, but few are frozen." Yeah. Wonk, wonk, wonk. Yeah, yeah. Where's Rex when you need him? Yeah. Yeah, that scared me. It was feeling like kind of a downer. It's like, you really want to start the service? Oh, okay, good, the punchline saved me. Right. Yeah. But seriously, why tell that story in a service about practitioners and invisible service is the title of this talk? And really, the reason that I told it is that although many of us are cold and few of us are frozen, really it seems more to me like many of us are cold and many of us are frozen. We are frozen in belief systems that no longer serve us. We are frozen in limitation, in a perceived limitation, and we fail to recognize that it is simply our perception, even if it seems really real. Do you know who's telling you who it's really real? Mostly yourself. Sometimes the media, but mostly yourself, is telling you that it's really real, arguing for the sake of the limitation. That's something that we do really, really well. And so we're here today to look at that, and to see if we can stretch into something better, rather than limiting life with our beliefs, because we believe what we see, right? No, we see what we believe, thank you. We see what we believe versus believing what we see. We can stretch our belief system to encompass a greater view of reality. That is the basic science of mind teaching, is that our thought or our perception creates our experience of reality. That's what that V stands for in the symbol, right? A lot of people think it's for Ventura. I think it's for Vishla, which is the kind of dog I have, but that's another story. It means that, my husband saw it and he thought it meant Allah, right? It means that thought descends and creates something in the form and then goes up to create more and more and more. There's a cycle of creation going on all the time. So that's what we teach here, and that's what we're exploring today in terms of welcoming a greater perception of reality and a greater way of being in the world, not only being in the world, but of being in service to the world. We don't have to believe the limited beliefs that we've held onto forever, okay? Even if we've held them for a really long time, we don't have to believe them anymore. We can just let them go and believe something better. Choose the better story. Choose the story that is more aligned with truth, because the truth cannot operate in a lie. And we are lying about the nature of reality all the time. The nature of reality is wholeness. But we'll get there in a minute. Let's take it slow. I want to talk a little bit about a better belief. One of my nephews likes to argue with me about a lot, everything. And because I'm a minister, he likes to argue with me about God. He's an atheist, and I love atheists. I think of, if there is a God, because we all doubt from time to time, right? If there is a God, maybe he's laughing at the atheist saying, "Oh, you're so cute when you're an atheist." No. What the response to atheists is generally complete respect, because I can understand why some people don't believe in the God that's been perpetrated by religion, right? Anybody? Yeah. Right. So, you know, to ask an atheist, tell me about the God you do not believe in, and I probably don't believe in that God either, right? Don't believe in a dogmatic, judgmental guy wearing a loincloth, chucking thunderbolts, right? My nephew asked me, what do you believe in? And without even thinking about it, the first thing that I said was the compost cycle. Don't get too excited over there, Norm. The compost cycle. You know, I cultivated my belief in the compost cycle, first of all, because I am married to a composting king who, when we first started composting, I would accidentally throw an eggshell into the garbage can, and he'd walk over to it and call me over and go, because evidently an eggshell is a really good thing. But I grew to love composting and swear by it, because, you know, another thing that ministers get to do is that we do memorials, and I consulted with a book by Ernest Holmes, our founder, about how you do a memorial, and it said in that little book by Ernest Holmes that what the people really want to know is that you believe in life after death, and that you believe that the death does not end, that the person doesn't end with the body. And so I looked at that within myself, and I said, did you really believe that? Do you really believe that? Can you stand in a memorial and say that with conviction? And then I thought about the compost cycle. Oh my gosh, the compost cycle is life after death. Food decays and becomes matter, and the compost and the bacteria eat it, and then it turns into life-giving soil, and it creates flowers and more food for everyone. Are you excited like me about that? That's a miracle. That's a miracle. So I believe in the compost cycle, because I think it's a metaphor for human existence, that we continue always, that we are constantly recycling and changing forms. Another thing that I believe in is something that I learned from our good friend Nipun Mehta, who is the founder of this organization called Service Space, that is a global service organization, and he's had a huge influence on this spiritual center. I was there working with him last weekend up in Marin County. Nipun Mehta speaks often of the mycelium network. You guys know what that is? Mycelium network, it's an underlying network that is fungal, and it allows plants to communicate with plants that are other plants that are far away. It's kind of like the internet for plants, right? They can know if this plant is sick and take precautions over here. The biology of the plant knows what to do. It's so cool. It's all over the earth. It's spread over all over the earth, and it's invisible service. And the metaphor for this is that when Nipun works with volunteers and when we do a project together, he requests that we act like the mycelium network, that we quietly work underground to create beautiful and divine service, to create a sense of being held in something invisible, to know that any hopelessness or helplessness or haplessness that anybody brings into our place is easily supported by this mycelium consciousness, this consciousness of an internet of connection that is unfolding perfectly in all things. Are you with me? Do you believe? Do you believe in the mycelium network? Hallelujah. Thank you, Brother David. Yeah. Funny, the event that I did with Nipun, with the mycelium, talking about the mycelium network, we had one of our practitioners who wasn't able to be here today. His name is Peter. Some of you know him, Peter Frank. And Peter was fascinated by the mycelium network. So we told him, it's a fungus, right? Oh, Peter's up there. Hi, Peter. Oh, darn, I can't say what I was going to say because he's going to hear it now. No, I'm kidding. No, I'm going to tell everybody. He knows what it is. Peter was fascinated by the mycelium network, and he was writing about it and speaking about it, and we finally told him, Peter, you put the fun in fungus. So when you see him, tell him, Peter, you put the fun in fungus. We also refer to him as a fun guy, because he is. But people, the truth is that we are all fun guys and fun gals, I suppose. Gals doesn't work as well, because the mycelium network, this interconnection that we all share, is always working. Do you want to hear the story of how we got this beautiful violinist that doesn't even go here to come and play for us? Oh my gosh, it's so cool. You know, I think somehow she heard about Nipun Mehta, and so Nipun is coming in October, and we're connecting together about having her come to that service as well. And then Mary Kerrigan, the choir director, another beautiful practitioner, tells me that all of our violinists are out of a way, they can't play for us. We need a violinist. So I'm like, oh man, where are we going to get a violin, right? So I'm talking about it with some folks, with some people in a staff meeting, and Jennifer Luce, another one of our practitioners, just called you by your maiden name, honey, I'm sorry about that. Jennifer Luce says, well, you know what? My mom's boss, my mom, Susan Seal, another practitioner, her boss is an accomplished violinist. And I said, oh, great, awesome. Think she'd be willing to come? Yeah, maybe. What's her name? Vanessa. Not the Vanessa that Nipun's been telling me about. Oh my gosh. And so I asked her and she said yes. So when you start becoming aware of this interconnection, things like that start to happen all the time. The exact support that you need comes into being, but we have to see it. We have to see it. Most of the time we walk sightless among miracles. We walk sightless among the beauty and the love and the grace and the power and the presence of spirit that is trying to express in our lives, but we're limiting it with our false beliefs. Have you ever looked for something, like a material object, looked for something, and you can't find it, and you can't find it, and then you look in a place where you look 20 times and you finally see it, right? That happened with a broom in our house the other day. We had a broom that we couldn't find, a whole broom, and it wasn't a tiny broom, it was a push broom, it was a big broom. And both Hugh and I looked all over the yard, and we couldn't see it. And then I happened to be strolling by, and I saw where it was, and I told Hugh, I can see the broom from where I'm standing. I was like, you're warmer, you're warmer, you're warmer, you're getting colder, you're getting colder. And it was just in a different place, in a different position than we usually hang it, but we didn't see it. Maybe that is a metaphor for life. Maybe that is a metaphor for that gift that you're looking for from the universe that is waiting for you in an unusual package, in an unusual surprise. You know, in the Enneagram, they say that the flaw is the gift. Maybe it's even waiting in a personal flaw or in a flaw that you discover in somebody else. How about that? I heard over there. Maybe that flaw is a gift for you. Maybe you've discovered a flaw in life, in your own life. Maybe that flaw is a gift for you. But it takes the consciousness to be able to reveal it. And it takes support. Support of those who know the truth about wholeness. And thank goodness we have all of these practitioners, about 30 of them, I think, I haven't counted lately, that know the truth of wholeness for all of us. I emailed the practitioners to ask them, how do they enjoy invisibly serving in our spiritual center? Now, many of them chose to remain invisible and did not respond to the question. However, I do have some that did, and I'm going to read those off. Jeanette, who couldn't be here today, she says that she is privileged to serve in the bookstore. Bill Seal offers the gift of prayer. Maggie is always in prayer for people. Jill serves our youth. Bernie serves as a quiet invitation to self-discovery, to open the heart to love and kindness. She facilitates courses that deepen the connection with the presence of spirit expressing through each individual. Jonna blesses each new practitioner. Susan Seal enjoys speaking to people she does not recognize in the social hall and welcoming them to our center and answering questions they may have. Lita offers meditations to create sacred connection, gardens to bring beauty. She showcases artists to shine their light. She sits with someone in deep prayer to shift experience and perception. She gives sound healing meditations. Cheryl said that the word receptacle came to mind. She loves being a receptacle for the deepest feelings of her brothers and sisters. And Kim loves working with our amazing preteens. It has been a joy to watch them grow into young adults. And as I was contemplating all of this, as I was receiving these emails of many of the ways, and there are so many more, for every one of these responses, there are hundreds of ways that the practitioners serve us. I was thinking about my own experience. I'm teaching a foundations class right now. It's a big class. There's 40 plus people in it. And so I need the support of practitioners as teaching assistants. And after the first class, which was a lovely experience, it was made lovely, I think, because of the presence of the practitioners, I wrote to them to express my appreciation of them. And this is for anybody who's ever TA'd or anybody who's ever served in this center. And I wrote to them, "I was moved to tell you how much I appreciated your brilliant presence in class last night. I can feel this powerful network of subtle support when you're there. I noticed you anticipating the needs of the students, providing handouts, distributing name tags, managing the seating. The wisdom you shared through both your questions and your answers was powerful. Even if you were silent, I felt your support. The invocation and the benediction were beautiful. The activity of welcoming students and helping them relax, preparing handouts, setting up chairs, providing fizzy drinks for us, locking up, helping me avoid backing into that guy's car. I need a lot of help with that all the time. Your humor that bubbled up on many occasions, all seemingly little things that add up to make a huge difference for all of us. Personally speaking, your support allows me to be present to the energy of the circle so I can do my job. I appreciate you so much. You are players in the field of love." Let's give a round of applause again for our players in the field of love. So you see, that's what I mean about the mycelium network. That's what I mean about this invisible support that is always going on. Probably some of you were not aware that practitioners do have that role in our center. And then we can also take that to a farther level and say that even beyond the practitioners, there is so much support in the world for us if we would just allow ourselves to receive it. And that's the question. How do we receive it? I have another practitioner story for you. I forgot to tell this person I was going to tell it, but she won't mind because I've told it before. We have a practitioner. Let's call her Jeanette. Oh, we do have a Jeanette. Let's call her Nanette. She might be the office manager in the center. And I was up in San Francisco. I was probably doing something with Service Space up there, and I was getting ready to fly back to where we live. Where do we live? Ventura, yeah, Ventura, Burbank at the time, and I used to be afraid of flying. I'm not anymore. I figured out how to overcome that, but at that time I still was a little bit afraid of flying, and so I called up Annette about some church business, or Nanette rather, about some church business, And we completed our conversation, and I said, "By the way, I just want you to know, I want you to pray for me. I'm about to get into a plane that's the size of a pencil." You know those little planes, those little, like, I don't know, 20-seaters? They look like pencils to me, right? Annette said powerful, healing words to me. She said, "Be the pencil." I don't know what that means. But I do know that if we are looking for invisible support in our lives, either visible or invisible support in our lives, it does help to be the invisible support that we wish to receive. In the words of St. Francis, it is in giving that we receive. I think first, what we need to do is to identify, start to learn to see the invisible support by identifying it and naming it, saying, "Wow, it really helped me when you did that. It really assisted me. It helped me be more present to what I need to do when you helped me with that." And we don't have to only do that at church, but we can certainly practice here. We can do that with our families, in our workplaces. You know, there is that little shyness, that little resistance that comes up when we start to do that. But just breathe through that and see if we can start identifying all of the invisible, or at least some of the invisible support that is available for us. And then the other thing is, be the pencil. Be the invisible support that you long to see. See if you can cleverly come up with ways to be in anonymous support for other beings. It doesn't have to be a big thing. Handing somebody a name tag in a class doesn't have to be a big thing. Showing someone where the restroom is. Helping somebody, I don't know, all kinds of things. Maybe parking far away from the church so somebody can park closer, since we do have, I've heard we have a little parking issue here. I don't know. I shouldn't have said that because I have a parking space. I'm so sorry. If anybody wants my parking space, we can talk, okay? Because I'm willing to give it up. I'm willing to give that invisible support now that I'm telling everybody, right? But there are all kinds of ways that we can support invisibly and visibly. It doesn't matter if somebody knows. But if we could all just kind of look at that and see if we can expand our support in this matrix, in this mycelium complex that is both the underground internet and the internet and the interconnection net that connects all of life. I think that's really what changes the world. It may not be the big things. You know, if we have a problem, we want something to come out of the sky like a bolt from the blue and tell us what to do. But maybe it's all of those little quiet moments of invisible support that really lift us into that greater consciousness. And from that consciousness, we midwife, sometimes clumsily, but we midwife the coming of a new world where peace is supreme and where we learn to be love, share love, and serve love. In that place, we know that at one time, yes, we did walk sightless among miracles. But in this new place of being love, sharing love, serving love through invisible support, we say to ourselves and we proclaim to each other that we were once clay touched by God, that we walked sightless among miracles. But now we can see it. We can see it. We can live it. We can love it. Invisible support for all. Let's love that now. Let us pray.